Dungeons and Daddies, not a BDSM podcast, is hitting the road this summer from May 31st through June 14th. We're doing part two of our U.S. live tour.
Whoa. I came up with a name for this one.
Yeah,
it's
called
the Areas Tour.
Kind of
similar.
Dungeons and Daddies, the Areas Tour, feat Taylor Swift. We're hitting the road again. Midwest and East Coast dates on sale. Tickets are available now. We're starting up in St. Paul, Minnesota. We're going to Milwaukee, Chicago, Indianapolis, Detroit, Pelham, Tennessee, Atlanta, New York, Philadelphia, and Boston.
Wow.
More info on our website, dungeonsanddaddies.com/live.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome, faithful listeners, to Teen Talk, a show about a show that just had its second season.
Yay!
We did it. We landed the plane, technically.
Hey,
any
alive.
Landing you walk away from is a good end landing, you know?
It's a good end
so
landing.
I guess this is going to be a retrospective, not just on the finale episodes, but on the series as a whole.
Yeah.
But I guess let's start with the finale in general. How did you feel about the finale?
It was so fun to be able to drop a big long one right at the end. You know what I mean?
Oh, you want a finale to have some
you
junk
want the
in the
juice
trunk, dude.
On. You know what I mean?
Fucking...
Nothing would disappoint me more. The show I'm listening to. And I'm like, all right, here's the finale. 42 minutes.
Yeah. It's like when you're watching like an HBO show and the finale is like 42 minutes. I'm like, come on. Mayor of East Town. Just give me
come on. Give me something.
Give
you know
me
what I mean?
Something more.
Fuck this HBO trend. Of
I don't know
second
what
to last
HBO year. Show you guys are watching that had a 42 minute finale because they're all like 7 hours.
I know. Yeah. But
even sitcoms nowadays are like, oh, this storyline just can't possibly fit the 22 minutes.
Yeah,
so this finale is 35 minutes long.
Episode of Ted Lasso. Yeah, I'm like,
what are you doing?
I'm sorry. Do you understand that he's invited two separate dates to the same restaurant? Yeah. We need a full 35 minutes to explore this to its full potential.
But I mean, it was, I'll tell you what, this one felt like. Like, when did we start this one? My sense of time.
Start the episode or the season?
The season, but also, like, I mean, well, so just to give you a background into sort of the way that we record the end of it. Season one, we recorded, we all sort of got an Airbnb, and we all powered through, like, 5 episodes or something like that.
Yeah,
it was
crazy.
A lot. And it was, like, the 3-part finale and stuff. And we didn't do that for this one, but we knew that we were, like, as we were approaching the end, we were like, all right, let's start.
We kind of did. We just kind of got stretched out. Like, over the course of 3 weeks, we did a lot of banking, both of MBIX and the season.
Yeah, because you guys had the tour coming up at South By, so it was like, okay, let's get this stuff wrapped up.
Yeah. And it was like, I remember going through the series of them and feeling like it was very different than like, oh, we're out in a place and we're all like just really, really focused on it. It felt more like what you'd expect from a second season of a thing. Like, okay, the machine is a little more well-oiled. We kind of have a sense of where we're going. We have a sense of how we've done this once before. Mm-hmm. There's a confidence going into it. I actually really enjoyed it. It actually felt like it was a very clean, smooth process, especially compared to season one. We had a lot of pickups after the fact. We recorded those
I was
like
anticipating
five.
A lot more duct tape on the back end, and we really didn't have much at all.
Yeah, it basically came out fully formed. Our pickups were like little tiny character beats. We're like, oh, let's change this little thing here. Like, small stuff. It was like Scary says a different song for the epilogue dance. We're like, oh, maybe actually the other song's
better. I'm driving home. I'm like, oh, no.
It was Dead and Gone originally, right?
That was the first one that came to mind. But on the ride home, I was like, that's not what it would be playing.
Well, and you also changed the way that Scary reacts to Willie's death.
Yeah. And it's like, I feel like people listening to both versions would be like, why did you change this? But it's just important to me that like she just didn't care. Now she had weaponized her not caring into what like Willie's death would be rather than weaponizing it on herself.
That's cool.
So, I mean, it was just like a very small beat.
Compared to season one where we were like, oh, this whole section we got to re-record.
Yeah.
And we kind of came in and patched stuff together. In that sense, I just had such a blast with it on the way out.
It was simpler also, like the combat as defined was simpler. They both essentially end with a big fight. in some ways, like, you know, the first season is like a more epic, like larger scale fight, but it's also more complicated because we had like multiple parties in different locations and like the teens were in one place. Like it was like a whole,
we
like,
had, a had like a whole whiteboard NPCs
to like even track it. It was like massive. It was like a whole thing. Whereas this was rather straightforward in terms of we're just going to try to kill Willie. I also thought then like the stakes were like also in a weird way, like clearer and maybe more immediate. Like the stakes of season one was like, you know, you got to get through the portal. But like the fact that the parents were at his feet and could get killed at any moment, like, at least as a player, the tension I thought was like really fun in this final fight.
Yeah, it was like an extra element that made it not.
And we were having bad roles.
Which again, we added at the last second, basically.
Yeah.
In recording.
Yeah. The previous episode.
Yeah.
I think it was maybe after Willie became God, or at a certain point, there was just like a time where like the last three episodes did. There's a lot of like stress getting up to it. But then like the last three episodes, I felt like were, at least for me, was like kind of just like a pleasure record. Like it was just fun.
Yeah. It was a really good record, except someone did make someone else cry. We're not going to say who. We're not going to say who said what. We're not going to get back into it. But I just, like, I want you guys to know that I remember who it was.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And I bet they still feel bad about it.
I was like, the finale went so smooth. Yes, I'm not going to talk about how I had to take a 10-minute break in the middle of it just to cry.
Do you remember what Matt said to you that made you so upset?
She remembers. She'll never forget what I said to her.
I remember well.
I was just bringing that up as a joke. We all know I'm very nervous about bringing up jokes now.
I was like in the bathroom trying to pull myself together. I'm like, they're never going to make a joke again. I was like, Will's never going to make a joke again.
Give a little context.
So basically, no,
it's not going to change the way the three of us act around you.
Yeah, don't worry, Beth.
When I did my mean joke about Beth rolling a natural one on her joke, I was like, haha, I'll be like Freddie and just roast someone right now. And then like it hit harder than I thought it would. And I could tell.
I'm going to give the context for this now that it's all over. In January, I got a concussion and it had some pretty bad, like, snowballing kind of effects because instead of going to the doctor, I just smoked a bunch of weed. And so was in the hospital for 2 weeks, had to take about a month off the podcast and wasn't able to record. And then finally, like, you know, got back to it.
At your most vulnerable state.
I was like feeling
this context is not making me look any better.
You just needed us to be friends and supportive for you, right?
I was like feeling like kind of like myself again. I was feeling kind of normal. Like I was like, okay, you know, I'm like talking to my therapist. I'm like, I'll never be funny again. I literally was like saying that to my therapist. I'm like, I don't think I'll ever be back where I was. And so
we're all like, let's just be really supportive. Yeah. Again, three of us.
Like fucking you guys were, you were a dream. You let me have all the time I needed off. You did Kingdom Dad Monster to fill in the, you know, truly if I had any other job, I would be like fucked. So yeah, it was great. And then I was like finally feeling like a little bit kind of like myself again. And then I was noticing as in the beginning of the finale, I was like, none of my jokes are landing. I fucking suck. And then Will's like, you rolled a natural one on humor. And I was like, I'm fucked. Everything's fucked. To our credit, I fucking pulled it together.
You fucking did. You did. And I thought you were being very funny before I said what I said.
I realized that you wouldn't have said that if you thought I was actually like fucked up. So
this is what's fucked up is that like normally it's like if something bad happens to someone on the podcast, they'll be like, oh, let's give them a card. Let's do something. And then you guys will be like, send them a card that says like, you stupid dumb bitch, pull yourself together. Like, I hate you. Why don't you fucking curl up and die? And like, I'll be like, that's really mean. Are you sure they're going to think that's funny? And be like, trust me, Will, they're going to think that's really funny. That's going to mean a lot more to them than like it being like some sort of forced thing. It always works. It's all like, all right, you know, like it's, you know, like let's just roast each other. And then it's like, I can't do it. I'm bad at it. And
maybe you're too good at it.
Maybe you're too good at it.
You know, hey, perhaps
maybe
you missed your scalpel calling. Is too sharp, my friend. Perhaps your cutting insight is a little bit too sharp.
Maybe you're too funny, Will.
Maybe I'm too funny.
You know, I think it was nice that Beth crying did give us like a nice break, like for a long episode.
Yeah,
like,
we you could just burst into tears into every episode
which
we
is,
do. That
by
would
the
be
way,
great.
Which is why Anthony, when you make the joke, we're like, oh, natural one. I'm like,
it's and that, so much.
It's
yeah.
so much funnier
that's
in
why
the room.
Everybody's reaction to that joke is like at 11 because it was straight up the funniest possible thing you could say.
It was
that
a perfect icebreaker.
Perfect.
Yeah, you're okay, Will.
No, it's not. It's fine. I'm fine.
You brought it up.
You brought it up.
That's true. I did bring it up. I knew it would be funny to talk about.
But things that we liked about the finale.
I've got a couple of favorite moments.
Go for it.
I completely missed this, but when somebody asked, like, what's your favorite position, and Will saying doggy style, it was like a throwaway.
Oh, it's Willie's least favorite position to be in, I think. And then,
least favorite position. And I was like listening to the live listen, and I was like, I'd never heard that in the room. I was like, fuck, doggy style. That's fucking hilarious. I wrote down no womb for me from Matt, but I have no idea what the context is.
That was Matt's whole thing with it was just running joke of every time we'd come out of one of the angels, he'd be like, a rebirth of sorts. Then he was like, no womb for me, please.
And I jump out of the angel eye or whatever.
I think the $42 scissors have to be my favorite part of the fucking
season. That's, I think, one of the funniest riffs. That was mine, where it's like Will being like, it's in your mind, and you decide, and Matt just being like, I cannot describe to you how much you're just describing. Driving rock, paper, scissors.
I've never seen a less funny bit become more funny.
Yeah. An argument, a pretty of my argument really has a danger of going in the wrong direction, but this one just held on just enough. It escalating into an actual game of rock, paper, scissors, and then me winning on the laptop. And then there's
if you're not in the Patreon or the Discord, you wouldn't have heard this, but
yeah, I'll tell the story. So you hear it in the podcast where I say, fuck, I just bought these scissors. I don't know why they're $42. Because I just searched scissors in Amazon. I clicked on the first image of scissors, and that's what I showed
Freddy. Any of the follow-up images of those scissors.
Nope, I just clicked on the image and I showed it to Freddie, and I won the scissors, and I said, well, I won with these scissors, so I'm gonna buy them. So I clicked buy now. If you know anything about Amazon, buy now means buy now. They don't wait anymore. One click purchase,
dude.
Yeah, one click purchase.
There's one thing I know about Amazon.
That one click purchase, so it was good to go. So I forgot about this. Beth cried, so I forgot about buying the scissors. And then a week later, my wife is like, Matt, did you buy, what are these for? Are these cut? What are these? I look, and she has this massive box. It looks like a poster, like a movie poster size box. And she's pulling out this pair of scissors, and my daughter's looking at them, and they're like those 3 foot long ceremonial scissors.
You remember Clock Tower?
Yeah.
The Clock Tower.
The PS1 classic.
That's what I was telling Freddie, that for our tour, we need to
cut a ribbon.
Yes. We need to cut a ribbon. Yeah.
So I got these incredible red, massive, huge scissors, ceremonial cutting scissors. That will forever remind me that I beat Freddy in rock, paper, scissors on the podcast.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, we'll definitely bring them on tour. We'll have to do some sort of
throw them into the crowd at the end of the last show.
We'll run around with them on stage.
We'll do the Exorcist 3 kill.
Matt saying the it. I fucking died. Holy
what?
Shit.
You're referring
when you're
to the
talking
book?
About the book It. You called it the It.
I'm such an old man.
Oh my God.
The It.
Lose the.
And then Link at the end saying, don't hug me if you're not going to try. That fucking killed me. Oh my God. Well, yeah, what a great kind of full circle moment for Link and the whole cycle of brokenness kind of thing. And then fucking Lincoln Scary being married.
Holy shit.
That was such a when we hit the epilogue, and you can kind of feel it too. Everyone's a little bit tired, been a long record day. We feel like we're finally done. So then there's that loose energy. And then that loose energy, the amount of just yes anding just chucked across the room like fastballs.
Matt runs that epilogue.
Yeah, Matt QB1 over here. Fucking I mean to gas Matt up a little bit. I was a deer in headlights when we started that scene. And
I think the edit is essentially what it was like, which is I know we all knew we were going to do an epilogue, but I felt like that too because
I actually forgot.
I thought we were going to take a break or something. And Anthony's like, all right, we're going to do the epilogue now. We're all what?
Which is great. So Matt immediately jumps in with Link is the soccer coach, which was already the sweetest possible grown up Link thing you could do. And then I'm literally trying not to look at anyone because I'm trying to frantically think of what to do with Normal. And they're like, oh, I see you there, Norm. And it's which is what I needed because I needed to not overthink it. But then it was I'm still there and I'm like, I was emotional, so then I was all right, Normal's going to be emotional. And then, it all started to go from there in terms of, oh, he's sad. He doesn't want to be here. And then you being oh, hey, go help this kid put on the mascot costume was, such a generous move as a scene partner to be this is meat on the table for you to, play something off of. And once I got to that scene with the kid, I was I knew exactly what to do with it.
Yeah, perfect.
Appreciate it.
What went into the idea that Normal shouldn't be happy? He's the only one that sort of stands out as not having a good time at the party.
I have a lot of thoughts on this. When we kind of maybe circle back a little bit, we can get into a little bit more. But Normal, I don't think he gets closure with his father, even afterwards. One of my favorite moments is Sparrow turning into the Love Wolf. as Normal. I'm like, I think that's this beautiful moment for Sparrow, but I think it's like one of the worst moments in Normal's life. Mm. Like, because it's this feeling of like, this is what it takes for you to love me.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, this is the level I have to be operating it at to earn my father's love.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, which is not necessarily the right thing, because that's not necessarily what Sparrow is feeling in that moment. Yeah. But I think for Normal, like, this has been
that's
this whole struggle.
Read. Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's interesting because like we almost get into this in the version of the scene with him and Willie, where Willie's pretending mm-hmm. to be Sparrow. And then like he says to Normal, like, I'm proud of you. And then like he cuts Normal off, but like Normal's about to be like, I'm glad you're right now proud of me, but like, where mm-hmm. the fuck have you been? And I feel like Normal never gets that. And mm-hmm. then I think that that affects him deeply going forward. I think it like kind of fucks up his ability to kind of heal from mm-hmm. what's been going on. I think it kind of is probably something that affects his relationships going forward. Mm-hmm. Like in terms of like, when someone says that they love him, he mm-hmm. gets his guard up and stops trusting that. It just like he has like a really raw feeling mm-hmm. that he doesn't get the kind of like psychological closure that I think some of the other characters do from the adventure. Like he winds up angrier at the end of it, especially because his whole thing was like he was just stuffing his emotions in a drawer the entire adventure.
Yeah.
And then it's like now it's time for it to come out. But it's like everyone's already kind of moved on. Like everyone's happy. So he doesn't feel like he wants to bring it up.
You know, even though I think Link is like the scene master of the epilogue, I think like Norm is the way in. Like, you know, I feel like if you're listening to like any sort of party, I don't know, maybe I'm just a freakazoid, but I feel like you have no choice but to identify with the person that feels like a weirdo and it feels left out and is not quite connecting with the other people. And so, again, like when I was listening to the episode, this was like even before the live listen, I was like listening to it in the edit. Yeah, your moment, I was like crying. I was like, God, this is
the good
so
cry.
If you know me, I love a cry no matter what. But yeah, I was fucking crying.
With these epilogues, it's always interesting because, you know, it's very easy to kind of assume like, oh, this is the whole arc of the character. But like, right, I saw people being like, oh, were they not together? Did they not hang out anymore? But it's like, what? It's like 20 years later. Like, this is just a moment in time of this character. I didn't necessarily realize like Norm is sad or has no good relationships. I read it as like the experience that we went through in season two probably is maybe something Norm is still working through. And it's not something that he likes. Like the memories aren't great for him when he comes back. Like some people you go to, you can have a great life, but you go to your high school reunion and high school is not a thing you want to remember.
Yeah.
It didn't necessarily be like, when I listened to it, I was like, man, this time for Normal was harder for him than it was for the other characters.
That's essentially, for one, it was also like, if you're going to do a scene at a high school reunion, someone has to not want to be there.
There's no such thing. Spoken
not
like
everybody's at
if that scene
the
was just four
reunion.
People being like, and I'm a therapist and I got married, and then we'd be like, this sucks. I hate this. For me, it is like this feeling of like his post high school, post college years were very hard. And I feel like he hit the bottom at some point.
Yeah.
And this is like, you catch him like on his first step up. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel if he's in therapy, he was probably like, I've got a fucking high school reunion coming up. I really don't want to go. And
so if somebody told him he wasn't funny, like, like it would be hard for him.
But he persevered like you, Ben. To me, it was very much like he feels like this is something he doesn't want to do, but he knows he needs to do. And like that was kind of the energy that like it started to make sense to me when we played it.
I know we're on this epilogue, but I loved everything.
I mean, the epilogue was by far, I was so, so happy.
But Ben, he took it on too. Like once the through to you, it's also your thing to Freddie of like, you finally got out is like also like a perfect.
Well, but you said
then doubling down on the Jerry being our kid, like
as soon as his name rhymed with scary, I was like, that's my kid.
That's my son.
I think you'll hear it in the uncut too. But like, I want to talk about that because we were all laughing when I said honey, and then you responded. But then you said you weirdly thought the same thing.
You're gonna do the same move, right?
You thought that maybe they were just dating instead.
I thought that they had dated and had broken up. And then when you said honey, I'm like, we're married.
I don't know what it was. I was never like a big goth cleats person or anything.
Sorry, Matt, explain what that means.
Oh, goth cleats is the Tumblr
ship name.
And I was always,
Matt was, by the way, we were on this movie tour. Matt's like, I don't know, the goth cleats fans are going to be psyched tomorrow. I'm like, Matt, what the fuck did you just say?
You're on Tumblr enough.
I was like, what the fuck is Matt saying?
But yeah, since it was so spontaneous and I was just like feeling, I sent the thing over to Norm and then I was just like, oh, okay, he's a coach. I really know what's going on. And then just the moment you're describing.
I love this image of Scary just rocking out.
I'll be honest, this is what is. You literally just land on, maybe this is how I think of my wife too. You just land on like my love, which is like, Scary was just this confident woman dancing on the dance floor. I'm like, Link's in love with her. I was like, Link would marry this woman. I just said, yes, honey.
She is mine now.
I just thought it was so funny. I'm glad you went with it.
Beth, you then established that, you know, Taylor, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Everyone going to jail in that family.
I wasn't even thinking about that. I was just like, what's the dumbest thing I could fucking say about Taylor?
No, that was really perfect for Scary. I feel like that really resonated to people who really identify with Scary's arc, because like Scary has such a hard time like thinking that she could love somebody, or that even accepting love from her family, and like seeing her be this like confident person, not worried about how she's like looking in front
or
of her,
perceived,
and then,
yeah,
and then just having all this care, and like not only like having a child, but like just clearly being this like very loving like mom. I just loved it.
Thank you. Yeah, it was important to me that like I think I went in kind of the opposite direction that you did, Will, where mm-hmm. it's like I imagine Scary is still like kind of a fucking, you know, down on herself or has a hard time being happy, but for this moment it's mm-hmm. like high school meant something different to her too, and mm-hmm. so for this moment she's letting it all go.
This is where she met her hubby.
Yeah. I wanted so bad to get choked up during when we were recording the epilogue, but I was like, I can't cry again. Will's getting a little choked up. Anthony was getting a little choked up. I was like, man, this is such a touching moment, but I gotta keep it together.
I don't know where Taylor having an Apple Vision Pro came from. But
that
I
was so
it.
Good.
In the NFTs, but the reveal of 3 ankle tracking monitors was great.
Yes. Yeah.
I saw a couple of theories. One was that because Link says when we're all trying to figure out what we're going to do when we're God, and Link's like, I never want to pay taxes again. One of the great jokes in the episode. But someone was like, yeah, you know what? They get back and then Taylor thinks that happened and just never pays taxes. And gets arrested
definitely
for it.
Becomes
and
a sovereign citizen.
Taylor manages to get blue collar and white collar crime.
And someone else said that the 3 ankle monitors, one is from heaven, one is from hell, and one's from earth.
Oh,
like he's
getting
arrested on all 3 everywhere.
That's really good.
I was a big fan of, it's okay, we're just jumping around because not technically epilogue, but I was a big fan of Taylor's like before the epilogue ending. Like
I was the same.
It was so consistent. I love
that.
Oh
my God. Yeah. And that was a pickup. A lot of the stuff with Nick was a pickup, right?
Yeah,
all
the Nick stuff.
But the initial, the mom, yeah. You and Me Are Perfect was perfect.
Yes, I love that.
Well, then, I love that it has like no arc. You're both perfect, but it is like a realization to it. But then pairing it with the Nick stuff, being like Nick sucks, like it is this like
it becomes
breaking,
an arc.
Yeah, you break the cycle of trauma, I guess.
Like, into your own weird thing now.
Yeah,
sure,
just like, it's just me and mom.
I no longer have daddy issues. I have mommy issues.
Yeah, exactly. I've traded.
And
one
the fact
the
that
other.
You like you improv Glenn as being like, I don't know. We'll see if I want to hang out with my
grandson. Oh my God,
that's my favorite line of the whole episode.
I love that. Out. Like Glenn's the only like original dad that we see in the.
What's this? Streak of silver.
Out. Don't you want
like,
to hang out?
Like, don't you want to hang out with your grandkid? Let's find out. I was like, what is that?
Yeah, it's insane.
like, it's just Glenn saying like a tropey line, but in the context, like, how are you going to see if you want to go see your grandkid? What does that mean?
The vibe between Nick and Taylor, I'm just like, no. And then, like, my favorite little beat with Nick in the episode is then, like, when Taylor's like, Mom, you and me, we're perfect. We're an amazing family. And then, like, Nick still tries to, like, slip his way. And he's like, yeah, we are. We definitely are. He's like, no.
It's very, very good.
Yeah, Nick is really owned.
I feel like Freddie and Anthony have the same, like, plot graph in their head where the hotter a character is, the stupider they have to be. Because it's like, again, Nick is, like, the funniest of the Sundads. He might be my favorite just because it is, like, his entrance is this incredibly cool, like, he shows up and kills all these FBI guys, and it's just like every moment with the character he gets dumber and dumber, and dumber. Yeah. He's like the tuxedo mask of the season. He's so fucking funny to me. I just love it.
Well, there's two sort of beats that I was thinking about with Taylor on the way coming out, which was I was like, all right, well, everybody seems to be going through some pretty interesting, pretty nuanced character stuff. And I had even like in terms of my brainstorming, I had like just written out one night just being like, what would Taylor say? It didn't end up in any of the uncuts or anything like that. And he never says it. But in my head, it was like, in his head, he was thinking he's this like main character thing. And then very quickly, both the momentum of the story and also the normal stuff, it's just like, oh, he's not the main character. But then what is he then? Because that's a real source of tension for someone who's got main character anime kid energy. And I was like, oh, the funniest thing would be like to talk to the other teens, the fellow teens, and be like, I see now that on this journey, I was tasked with the most important job. To bring all of you to your character realization, to actualize all of you, your growths as human beings, a solemn task that I undertake with great seriousness, you know, which is like its own like brand of insufferable. So it's like that was kind of the energy. But then I was thinking about like, okay, well, what's he gonna talk about with his mom? Because it's like very quickly you'd be like, hey, mom, I don't know about the guy that you picked and all this stuff. But I'm like, nah. Nah, Taylor actually is like a true, just like, no, nothing is wrong. Forgive everything, which is its own problem. But it's like, nah, that's fine for Taylor and his mom. They just think, nah,
they deserve everything.
Which then to me is like, well, of course he's going to end up in jail at some point. The person with this kind of attitude is not the kind of person who's like,
Sam Bakeman,
gonna,
you know what I mean? Energy.
Yeah, exactly.
How about you, Anthony?
Yeah.
And the doodler, and you got a little choked up at the end.
Oh, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah,
we're
going to talk about
that. Where's the phenomenon for you?
Let's talk about you being a little bitch boy.
I thought I had forgotten about the doodler because he had this like nice ending. And honestly, my favorite part of the epilogue is the doodler coming back.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so sweet. And I know it's like, you had a certain, but I also just appreciate the way all four of us, like, you know, also like a surrogate to you. It's like, no, you don't get me sad, Anthony.
Yeah.
Like we're bringing you in to this. But I was just wondering what you did the most work. The season's the hardest for the DM.
My thought with the doodler thing, part of the reason I was crying, because I was thinking about what I wanted it to be, which is the moment from Toy Story 3 where Ellie is like waving to Andy with Woody. And for a second, Andy's like Woody's real. Like, you know, he's saying goodbye to his childhood and that kind of stuff. And to me, that was like, dude, waving goodbye to all of you or whatever. And so that was, I think, the main reason I was tearing up, just because I was thinking about Toy Story 3. So
I mean,
that's a good reason to tear up, though.
And then, yeah, you pulling him in and being like, no, you have to dance with us. You're here in the scene now. I thought was a really, really funny little moment. I think we've talked about the finale a lot, but like, holistically, how do we feel about season 2 of Dungeons and Daddies, which are we going to call it Legacy? Is that what we like?
I don't know. Legacy is pretty good. We don't have to decide on right now.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I guess we'll be talking about
Piss Bang Bang.
Piss Piss Bang Bang's pretty good. I mean, I guess I'll just jump in. I guess the reason I like the finale so much is like, I thought it was fitting for the season. And I think the season is fitting for what we were exploring with. I don't know if it's chicken or an egg. I don't know how, if the form of the season made the characters or the other way around. But like, I liked that. At least to me, it felt fittingly high school. It felt messy. It felt very character driven. It felt like the characters were trying to explore themselves and not knowing exactly what's going on. And like, yeah, sometimes I think it made it more confusing, or it wasn't like as tight in some ways as the first season or all these other things. But at least as a player and listening to it, like, it'd be hard for me to even compare them or like one more or the other, because it's been so long since I played Daryl in a real way. And like, I've grown to really love Link and all of his friends. And the ending felt very appropriate. Like, I don't know. Like, I felt better after the end of this finale recording than I did after season 1 finale.
It really felt
perfect for me as a player. I just felt really satisfied. Like, weirdly enough, for it being all kind of like more messy in some ways, like, I thought the very end was a lot tighter and simpler and like cohesive. Like, everybody only needed like a tiny little moment with their dads. And it wasn't like after the battle and everything else, like when the moms come in. It was like, it was a little moment was all we needed to kind of feel like we had been through a journey of high school. And then that epilogue was just felt so organic and like unstrained and just like fun. Like, I don't know. It just felt, I thought it was great. I loved it.
I think it's a much better finale than season 1's finale.
And for me, when I think about the season as a whole, it does what I respect the most in the artists who I love, which is like, people may have heard me make this comparison before, but when we talk about anime, to just give you, you'll see where I'm going here. But like, when we talk about anime, right? Miyazaki's the GOAT. Everyone acknowledges that. But for me, I like Masaki Yuasa better. And Masaki Yuasa has done a whole bunch of range of things. And I would sum up their bodies of work as follows. Miyazaki, it's never below a B+, A-, right? Mm-hmm. It's always an A-, at least, if not A, right? And then if you look at Yuasa's work, some of those movies are dog shit. Like, some of them are this wild swings. But because he's going wild, some of his movies go higher. They reach greater heights than anything that, like, Miyazaki has done, in my opinion. And so to me, I'd much rather be the kind of person and do the kind of work where it's like taking big swings. And to me, season 2 was this like big swing, and it's different. And I think it's very easy to look at it and be like, oh, yeah, okay, here's what we have, this formula in season 1. Let's just copy this. Let's just do it. And let's just run this as long as we can. And even philosophically, I've been fucking doing this game since right out of college. I've seen rises and falls of empires, of entire, like,
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe.
And I've seen so many things, both individuals, groups, they fall into the trap of, we made something cool and it's working and we got to run this as long as we can. And like, I've seen the end of that road for a number of my peers in this space, and it's a horrific road. It never ends well. Nobody ends up happy, and it always leaves a bitter taste in your mouth. Whereas I think for everything that we've always tried, and something I'm so proud of with season 2 and something I'm so proud of with this group, is the bravery of being able to like take a weird swing, not knowing where it's going to go. And that's like, I can tell you, it's so much harder when you have like a baseline of success that you're like, okay, hey, this is already kind of working. Why shouldn't we do this? It's like, yeah, but like there's a trapeze artist risk taking that happened in season two. And I found myself in playing Taylor having so much more fun, I think, than playing Glenn. You know, I love both characters dearly, but for me, there was something about like being able to play Taylor and to be able to like bounce around in this space and to have that feeling of like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen here. I don't know where we're going. Wait, you're bringing in someone to do stand up in front of, like, well, this is, you know, like, I think that having that feeling, and that is something I value very greatly when it comes to creative work, because I think it's way too easy to get stuck doing one thing and trying to chase that, because you're never going to chase it. So instead, try something different and try to like zag out a little bit and see like where it goes. That's what I think I'm most proud of when I look back at the sort of body of season two, is that it is so distinctly different. And I loved it. But that's sort of my subjective take on it. So I'm really proud of everything that we do. I'm proud of the ways that we continue to experiment. And I like that we're willing to like just go for a thing and see how it goes and do our best on it. And it's going to be different. I think that that's the only way you survive in this weird creative world. There's only one constant I've seen over and over again, which is people get sick of things. And I think the worst thing that can happen is not that your audience gets sick of something. Mm-hmm. It's when you get sick of something.
Yeah.
And I've seen the people get sick of something. And like, I think over and over again, when I think about this show, when I think about the directions that we push it, when I think about like the directions that Anthony, you were pushing things in season two, that gets me excited. And if you're not excited, I think as someone who creates something in this very, very saturated world of visual and audio media that you can consume, if you yourself, the creator, isn't excited about, then what the fuck is the point? You know, mm-hmm. Go find something else that you can do. I just had a blast, and I really enjoyed just the whole process from beginning to end.
Something I think is really interesting about season two, and looking at this as a person who hasn't been doing this since college, who's, you know, only became kind of a publicer person, you know, since season one of Dungeons and Daddies, is that, you know, in comparing the two seasons, season two had pressure to live up to season mm-hmm. one yeah, and yeah, stuff yeah, like yeah. that. But it's like we're playing kids who are pressured to live up to the legacy of their parents. And so it's like,
yeah, there was
it's like
that,
a weird, yeah, yeah, like, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember something that stressed me out about season two was like having to contend with all of the knowledge of the season that came before, like yeah, having to yeah, hold yeah. all of that in my mind as mm-mm. a character and as a person, like just knowing facts and like feeling the weight of season one on top of me. And I thought that's even cooler than that we were able to create something new and kind of just like, yeah, get out under the shadow and form our own kind of thing. Because it at the end of the day, you're your own person and you're not your parents as much as society would have you think otherwise. So it's an interesting kind of a zag. Yeah.
I think that's why the epilogue was so fun. It's like the other dads weren't in there at all. Like it really felt like the four mm-hmm. of them were just like them now.
Coming into their own. Yeah.
To me, the metaphor is that season two felt like raising a teenager. Mm-hmm. Like it was like this kid, you have like a bunch of your own conceptions of what they're going to be like, how they're going to grow up, all based on, you know, like your own distorted rose tinted version of your own childhood, which for me was like my version of like whatever season one was.
Sure,
so like,
yeah.
You watch them and then you're like, oh, they aren't what I thought they were. They're making mistakes that I can't control. And they are doing things that are, you know, their own thing and they're failing and learning their own lessons. But it's like you watch a kid grow up and make friends and like have experiences that you've never seen before. And then like, they come into their own and you're so fucking proud of them. And that was a kind of my arc with it. Like, yeah. I think I came in with way too much baggage, like the same kind of pressures you were talking about, Beth, like being very nervous about living up to season one. I know I was excited to do something different, but I don't think I was quite ready to really, I was like, I knew that that was something we should do, but I wasn't quite ready for everything that that was going to take.
Yeah.
And then I think at a certain point, like it was just, you kind of surrender your control of it and you go with it. And then it was like, I don't think there's a funnier run in the entire show than finding Tori into fucking the Apollo space mission episode.
Yeah.
It's like, I think the funniest 1-2 punch in the entire show. And then fucking like, then Terry dies the next episode.
So
it's like, I love it just as much as season one. I'm just as proud of it. I think I might be more proud of it. I'm really, really, really going to miss playing normal. I'm going to miss playing like, you know, like the other characters. Yeah. I don't know. It was a journey. I think it was definitely a harder process than season one for me. And it was a struggle. And, you know, like at the end of the day, I'm extremely proud of it. And I'm extremely proud of all you guys. And I am.
You going to roll natural one on not crying?
I am extremely proud of Anthony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I know he doesn't want to hear, so we'll press it. But,
no, we'll press it.
I just, you took on so much fucking work this season.
Yeah.
And it was so hard. And I know that a lot of it was especially hard for you, which again, we don't have to get into if you're not comfortable with it. It's fine.
That's fine.
Like the way you showed up every day, the way you put your whole effort into it, and the originality you brought to everything and the vision you had for it and the way that you were able to keep going and just carry us to this fucking ending that was amazing. Like, I'm in awe of it. And last thing I wanted to talk about from the finale itself was the choice to have, I was just so stunned by the simplicity of it, but having the kids sit on the throne of God and get to make one choice, just turning the keys completely over to the players for one moment, is such an incredible act of trust in your collaborators. And it was also just like, it makes sense. It fits in the thing. And it's like the perfect climax of the show. Cause it also is like, again, like so much of it is us trying to undo our parents' mistakes and like wrestling with the choices that they made. And then it's like, okay, now you have the ultimate choice. What are you going to do with it? And it just allows the characters to kind of like have this, you know, sort of like, to me, like a really satisfying conclusion where again, like we choose to, you know, love instead of hate. And without spelling anything out, it wasn't like, you know, like you have your choices or A or B. It was like, do whatever you guys want. I thought it was so fucking cool, man. And anyway, I just...
thank you.
It was an absolute joy and one of the greatest creative experiences of my life playing this game that you laid out for us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a really hard time with this season. I came in super excited for it because I was like, ooh, I've got these twists planned. I've got the Code Purple thing and I've got all this stuff with the dads and I've got, you know, this entire basically lost season that is an entire story about just the season one kids and this is now the season two dads.
Yeah.
And I think the awkwardness of elements of this season is me trying to force that into a story that should be yours, or I don't know. I have a lot of very mixed feelings about this season, but I generally think that we did something really cool, generally speaking. I think it ends well. I think all the character stuff that you guys did was really, really smart. I think we found a couple of little set pieces that were really, really fun and really, really different. I was basically in a pretty bad emotional space for a lot of this season for a variety of reasons, but mainly because I read too much commentary online about like the show. And so I was like, oh, this, I'm ruining it. Like I'm ruining the livelihood of five people. And it was a big weight on me.
Yeah.
But the thing that ultimately made me feel like okay about this season is I realized like, oh, this is our Legend of Korra. Like nobody likes Legend of Korra as much as they like Avatar, but everybody's like, yeah, it's a pretty good show. It's probably worth watching. And if I'm going to do a rewatch of all of Avatar, yeah, I might as well do a rewatch of Legend of Korra too. You know, hey, why not? And to me, that's sort of where I sit with this season. I think there's a lot of mistakes I made early on in the season that I think we got away from, thankfully. And I think we landed the plane in a nice place ultimately, but yeah, I think going forward, the next season that I DM is going to have less direct connection to the season prior to it, because I think that was a lot of the stuff that made me really interested in the season, but also a lot of the stuff that made some of the difficulties and some of the imperfections sort of show up. But I think generally speaking, it was a big swing. I'm glad I made the swing. It didn't always hit, but I'm glad that we did it. And I'm very proud of all of you for the work that you put into it.
I'll give you one more compliment.
Oh,
because we talked about, no, because I think it's important. It's something that, you know, I think everybody learns and at once, because, you know, it's not like this is the first thing you've had a long and varied career in video games and writing and so forth and so on. But I think it's not easy, but it is definitely easier to be creative and keep going when you're having a good time and when it's going well. Like that's the height. That's like the most fun part about creativity and it's the most fun part about this job. But I think real artists and people who will stay in an industry or a career, the harder thing is to keep going when you don't feel good about it, when you're not sure about it, when you're doubting yourself. Like that's the hardest part. And the longer you do this, the more you will have those times. And the way a lot of people deal with it is just to put their head down and go through the paces and just get through it. You're just putting your head down. You're just hoping you get to the other end. But like, I never saw that with you.
No,
and like, that's the hardest thing to do. And it's the thing that I always struggle with and always try to make sure. And honestly, like your job is a lot harder. Like for me, like I co-write a lot. I co-direct. Like it's nice when you have somebody like in that little bubble with you, because you can push each other a little bit if one person's feeling down like that. But even when you're at your lowest, like you're always trying to find something creative and interesting and new to do. And to me, that's what makes a real artist and a real creative person. So I was just very impressed with you the whole season. I know it's hard, but you did a great job.
Thank you very much.
And like your humility as a collaborator.
We don't all need to jump on. We don't all need
That's how the show works. We do a circle now. We all get to say our favorite part about Anthony.
Do it. Fucking.
You only got to deal with this once a season, bro. Yeah. Just relax.
I won't go. Yeah, I will be very surface level and bitchy about it. But, you know, it's like I fucking get my feelings hurt all the time. Like if somebody's like, this idea is better, I'm like, fuck, what is wrong with me? Your ability to take ideas from other people and incorporate them and say, let's do this differently. And let's, I think it takes much more strength than anybody would admit to. So yeah, I'm in awe of you, man.
And I also think a lot of the legacy stuff, just to talk about the show in general, the last season, I think, is actually super cool. Like, and I think it actually, like, it winds up being a hard thing to integrate. I think you're absolutely right. And like, there were times where I felt like it's very appropriate for the show because it's these, there's no other way to do it. Yeah. We're the fucking kids of the kids who went on the thing. So like what those kids were doing, how they grew up is an integral part of A, both the fact that it's a sequel season and that people are very, again, people got really attached to Lark and Sparrow and Grant and Terry, which is a credit to your work. But like people really wanted to know what happened to those guys when they grew up. So like the story of their broken friendship is like a huge part of what influences the story this season. Yeah. So it is a lot of the, like sort of the meat and gristle that the kids themselves are wrestling with the sins of their fathers. So like it's essential and it's a hard lift to figure out how to work that in. But it is like, I think a lot of the really compelling moments throughout the season came out of that stuff. Like agreed. I really loved everything we did with Normal and like with like, finding out what happened with Code Purple, which was devastating. Like, I really like the time jumpy episode where the dads show up and we're seeing that stuff. It wound up being a really interesting and fun element of the show. So that was all I wanted to say about that.
To speak sort of broadly about this weird space that we get into, like, I want to also make sure that we acknowledge we're in such weird territory right now. You know, I mean, this isn't like we're sitting here writing a TV show and there's been how many hundreds of thousands of TV shows and writers' rooms you can look at or feature films or dramas or plays or free act, whatever, right? The thrill, the tightrope walk of this genre, which is what excited me about it when we first started. And it was what is, I think, exciting to so many people who listen to it and a reason why it has grown even as a genre in the 5 years that we've been doing it, going from a niche of a niche of a niche of a podcast genre to something that we can do and have this be almost like a career of sorts for us. This is weird territory. And it's almost like it's a writer's room where it's like, cool, you get one shot at your idea and it's live and we're working it immediately in. It's a tightrope walk.
It's a fresco painting, right?
It is. Yeah. And it's like, again, I always have been listening. I've been quietly listening to other shows as well. And again, there's different styles. There's other DM styles who it's like, okay, you get a sense that they've written out the whole lore and all that stuff. But like, I think
we go against that by me preparing nothing.
Well, no, but I think that
like brings nothing into the drift.
But like, there's something like really interesting and really exciting and unique about that approach, right? Because I think we know the world of like, okay, it's written out, and to me, it's like this is something that's live on its feet and it's evolving, and it feels way more like free jazz.
As a writer, I mean? It definitely reminds me of a first draft is what it always feels like. Like your first draft of a screenplay is usually pretty weird and kind of like all over the place. But like also the rowdiest ideas are in the first draft.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like in the craziest lines and the stuff that you remember from it. To me, a lot of the fun of like surrendering yourself to that and then just fucking going for it like has been. Yeah. Anyway, it's just been really.
It's a terrifying process. And I'm proud of us for being able to just be like, no, again. Keep going at it like this, right? Like on the spot, what can you come up with? What are you evolving in the moment? What's everyone in the room? There's like an energy, which is, by the way, like I think one of the reasons why this show, we felt such a difference in this show season one when the pandemic hit and we switched to remote, right? Like there's something very much that I value about this weird living room setup that we have that feels so much more immediate and like this live fucking ball of electricity that we're throwing around to each other. There's, I don't know. I never would have thought getting into movies that the process of storytelling could express and manifest itself in so many different ways and different approaches that yield such interesting end results. And I think that like, for me, the last 5 years of this has been a real like lesson in being like, hey, all this stuff that you went to film school, you think you know about narrative and all this stuff. It's like, take all that bullshit and like, no. There's even other ways of looking at that. There's even other ways of approaching the fundamental things that we think we know about storytelling and look at how it works and look at the flavor and look at the angles that you can get from this that you can't even touch
in the world of like if you had written this all out and you had this all planned out and it was all every idea had 10 different iterations and we bounced it around for 2 weeks pounding our head in the writer's room. It's like it's been such a great reminder of like the ways that storytelling can shift and have all of these really interesting outputs anyway.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, there's permission to play and there's permission to fail. And I love that. If we could zoom out for a second, I've got some questions to cut in line for maybe some of our listener questions.
Do we have listener questions?
I'm sure we do.
Okay.
What do you think your most memorable record was of this season?
Who asked that one?
Oh, no, this is just Beth questions.
Oh, these are Beth questions.
These are Beth questions.
She's
definitely from the audience.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, probably doing stand-up for Tori.
Gotta be Tori.
Yeah,
that's the most memorable.
It's like burned in my mind. Oh my God, Matt with the Garfield movie. I remember my insides coming out of my body. It was like, it was horrific. I loved every second of it.
I still think about your joke about like, you wish you had a time travel machine so you could go back and tell more sexist jokes.
I think that the Tori thing was like a crazy therapist in a movie would do to you. And especially for me, like, again, I have a ton of anxiety. Yeah. Like, I very much have a perfectionist. Some things so like Anthony just shoving us out the fucking airlock and being like, this person has not seen the show. They don't care. They're just fucking here. It's like, this is a stranger. And like, do an in-character stand-up bit in front of them. Like, again, it's like, it's exposure therapy for failure, right? And you know, like, after I did that, it was like, I don't have any fear about this character. This is like, I can fucking do anything now. Like, it was a really, really fun.
Still doesn't feel like that actually happened.
Yeah.
like, when you brought that up, I'm like, that's right. This season's wild. Like, we did stand-up in Family Guy universe to a stranger. Yeah, that's definitely the most memorable.
For whatever reason, I think the one that really still sticks in my mind was an early one when we end up teleported into the FBI and we're stuck in that room. And I remember just like, not the whole record, but that section there being like, oh, what the fuck am I going to do now? And ending that episode and then getting into the next one with that feeling for a whole week was very memorable to me in the course of this one.
I remember the one where Elise showed up.
Yeah.
Was like, that was the one where I think the season two tone like locked in.
Yeah.
I go back to all the time the trumpet acid joke.
Yeah.
Where like the trumpet acid joke was like, this is not a season one joke. Like, I don't think we would ever do the trumpet acid joke in season one. But I was like, oh, okay, season two is playing by different rules. That and then the pilot. Like, I remember just coming in with such a fucking nervous energy. And like, once we hit the ground running and like, the elevator bit, like, I think was like
the whale.
Yeah, the whale. Yeah. Like, do you want to see the whale? Like, I just remember laughing so fucking hard in the room with that stuff.
Yeah.
Fave intro.
Ooh, the intro.
Favorite intro. We went much more musical this season. Yeah,
we do a disservice to ourselves by only replaying the musical intros before our live listens. I often forget some of our non-musical intros because of that.
I mean, I really like the Ladybird one.
The what?
The Ladybird one?
I totally forgot about that one.
Yes, because that one has like the very specific beat from the trailer. Yeah. Oh my God.
We should put up
the gag of like the L turns into a gun.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Saying like Lady Bird 7. No, it's but the gun one. Is a yeah. Right.
We should do a compilation of all the non-musical.
We should.
Intros.
It would be fun.
Just
as because it's probably like what 45 minutes. It would be fun to.
Yeah.
I'll answer to two different versions: the musical ones and the non-musical ones. The non-musical ones. We've done several Metal Gear parodies, but Link and Taylor doing the mission briefing about Kegels. It was like a real
the fact that you can hear when it like goes into like live
the
action
CD
footage
load.
Yeah. that you can just hear the audio quality change is like the most specific joke for the smallest amount of people that I hope appreciate it so very much.
It's two lines. Fucking Matt does this perfect Link as David Hayter as Solid Snake fucking voice, which is so funny. And then like I just re-listened to this one. Taylor has a couple specific beats that crack me up. One, just the like after World War II and the defeat of Emperor Hirohito, which has nothing to do with the Kegel's guy. Yeah. Is that, and then there's this one line where you're like, Link. And it's like exactly how the Colonel says Snake. Like, it's just like these guys have played so much fucking Metal Gear, they know exactly what they're doing.
I know.
One of my favorite ones to write was the one where Tony Pepperoni dies and the Queen had just died.
Oh, yeah.
We do Tony Pepperoni's funeral. Wow. And like, I remember like I found like this like 30-minute BBC video of the Queen's funeral procession. And I like, it was like the most pizza puns I've ever stuffed into anything. I just had a ton of fun writing that one.
That one was fun too, because I was, for the reverb of that, I was trying to match the actual church reverb to like, which is like such a weird little.
But it makes that joke. It wouldn't work without like everyone's been in a church and heard the echoey microphone.
It's a very specific,
and it's like, And then in terms of the song ones, we hit the ground running this season with the music parodies to the point where I'm like, we should
cool it.
This is becoming too easy. We should be doing less musical parodies next season. Huge fan of All Star.
Yeah.
That was the first one we made Anthony sing on. And I was like, oh shit, Anthony fucking killed it.
Hype.
That was another one where it's like, I think I had another idea and then I was like, all right, let's just fucking, and it was like, oh, this is like, once I didn't think it was sad when I wrote it. And then we heard it. It was like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's crushing.
People are going to cry listening to this all-star
I'll be
parody.
Watching you from the stars. Fuck off.
The most fun I had was definitely the Bill Nye one because of just how loosely we recorded it and how just perfectly it ended up and just being able to go into and play with like, okay, what are the effects they would have had in like the 90s? They wouldn't have any of these nice effects. It would all be really pretty.
Oh, they're like, wow.
Yeah. And then, I mean, like to me, far and away the best intro was the redux of See You Again.
I was like, nobody liked
people
that
were mad at
oh
it.
My
no,
God.
The fact that people were mad at it is why it's my fucking favorite.
My
don't you understand? I'm just a fucking troll.
My two favorites.
It's so good. It's so funny. The audacity of it.
I'm proud of that one.
I'm so proud of that one.
Nobody else liked
no, I'm so, it's so much funnier.
I'm still in love with the idea that this character that was in there for half a second.
For half a second.
Gets as much of a thing as Peyton did. Yeah, I'm a big fan of that one. My favorite is that one. And then my other favorite is just Black Parade with you, Beth.
Oh, yeah. Holy
that's
Black shit.
Parade. I don't mean to insult, but like, I never care. That song's whatever to me.
Go fuck yourself
Go,
for
what?
One.
Really?
It's whatever to me. It never hit me.
Whatever. That's fine.
Best seeing it, I get the song now. And I would always rather listen to your version than the real version.
Yeah, I prefer Beth's
100%.
Version.
100%. I think the voice, again, it's not about the specific scene quality or whatever. Like, your voice and the way you perform it, to me, is, I don't care.
Do you
to me, is better than who, I don't even care who,
Gerard
I don't know who
Way.
The band
Gerard.
Is. Don't care.
My respect on his name.
Is better, yeah. Is better.
Beth,
I love
do you
it.
Feel like those early ones, because we did that, and then we also did Mr. Brightside. Mm-hmm. Do you think that got you ready for Stop
Oh,
Herself?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like, yeah. For some reason, it had never like occurred to me that I would be doing like Sophomore Slump until I very vividly remember like Freddie coaching me on the screaming parts of Black Parade and stuff like that. And then like driving home and be like, I think I can do this. Like if I fucking put my mind to it. So yeah, it was like a big pivotal intro for me. This last intro, I'm sorry. I just loved playing Jessica so much.
Yeah. It's so good.
The line of that, what is still to me is Anthony should be like, I've asked you several times not to call a cop.
Fuck. I had a blast with
there
it.
There is a vast difference between is like, I don't know how that joke is laid on the table for all of human history and you're the first person to make that because it's such
crazy,
a good joke.
What's crazy too is like, and I love that we kept this is like, because it still kind of works, but if you listen to it, you absolutely tell it's like, is that you're breaking?
I know. I'm totally like corpsing it.
You're corpsing like, as you say it because it's so insane.
Yeah,
like,
we didn't really have a script for that one, so I was just like, come and pee-pee. Like, I was losing my mind.
We broke many times in that recording. That was a fun...
That was a cool, uncut record.
I think my favorite little bit, not to bring it back to Schmegen, but like, I can't remember, I think it was your idea, Matt, to have Henry show up. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
we were like, and then Henry shows up and does a verse, and then I was like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if Henry showed up, and then you're like, give him like a fucking kid. Like, give him a new kid.
A new kid.
And, which is how we came up with Birdie Oak, favorite, who was supposed to show up at one point, but did not show up, which I like more that she's just out there. Is she a bird? Is she a person? We'll never know, but that was very fun.
That was real troll energy.
I think it was originally, I was like,
put lore in this intro that nobody will like, put a lore jump in there.
Yeah, a huge lore drop.
This was a pure
there.
Troll energy intro.
which, when I heard that intro, I was like,
right, like, oh no, what do they do?
Here's one more thing I can either ignore or try to wrap up.
Oh God.
Speaking of theme music,
yeah, speaking
songs,
of intros and music and all this stuff, stay tuned, folks. We got Maxton Waller in the live waiting room waiting to come on to talk about the theme song.
Well, he's mugging to the green room cam right now. We'll see him after the break.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. shopify.com/work.
Dungeons & Dice is brought to you this week by Blue Nile.
I'm tired of living in a state of denial. I gotta get engaged.
It's time to get married, everybody. Yeah. Buying someone jewelry is usually a great experience all around. They get a gift. It's probably pretty good, one would hope. And you get to see the look on their face when they open it. The hard part, finding the right piece.
Yeah, there's nothing stopping you from buying the ring you want now while you're waiting to find the man that you need later, right?
Yeah, absolutely what I should be doing.
Yeah, just buy the ring you want now.
Figure out how to get the perfect piece at the best price, Beth. BlueNile.com. Thousands of independently graded diamonds and fine jewelry at prices significantly below retail.
Wish I could find thousands
retail.
Of independently graded men, am I right?
Peace of mind with every purchase. You ain't getting that on Hinge. With some of the highest quality standards in the industry, not even Raya can keep up with that. Whether you want to make a classic statement.
You know what they say about online dating, the odds are good, but the goods are odd.
Whether you may want to make a classic statement by gifting a white gold tennis bracelet. That's a...
White gold white cocaine?
A tennis bracelet?
Ooh.
Like in Challengers?
Like in Challengers,
oh,
yep.
Fuck, yes.
Or maybe...
Just like in Challengers.
Yep.
Sapphire and diamond hoop earrings?
Ben, let's start
bracelets.
By finding one guy before it's too
high. No, I need two, and they need to make out with each other, too.
Blue Nile jewelry experts can help you find the perfect gift for... What is it? A thruple situation? What is it? Is it Jules and Jim? Like, what is Challengers? What was it?
It's kind of like a combative thruple.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. The dream, right?
Yeah.
What jewelry will I need to buy to make the two boys kiss?
Well, you know, you could ask Blue Nile's experts because they're available 24/7 by phone or chat to answer technical questions and give recommendations for every budget. What are some expected or unexpected challenges you might encounter when shopping for jewelry gifts? Well, first and foremost, when you have two tennis players vying for your attention and you're trying to
different ring sizes.
Yep, multiple sizing, different tastes. You want to make them jealous of each other.
Yes.
And you want to recreate that famous scene in Challengers when Zendaya holds up an engagement ring and goes, which one of you kisses best? I give this one, dude. And the two boys kiss each other. Go to Blue Nile.
And also, while they're kissing each other in your hotel room, you can feel great about your purchase because Blue Nile also offers a diamond price match guarantee. They might be locking lips and tonguing each other,
but you're
not locked into a bad deal. That's right, Ben. Hell yeah. And just in case.
Holy shit.
30-day returns. That's a big 3-0, a.k.a. a finished set in tennis. Shop Blue Nile today.
You're going to love these rings.
Shop Blue Nile today and experience the ease and convenience of the original online jeweler. Go to BlueNile.com today. That's BlueNile.com.
Should we introduce our special guest for
special
this
guest
part
Maxton
of the
Waller
after show?
Hey,
look
how
who
doing?
Just walked the into house. The studio.
Hey, y'all. You know, I was thinking actually we should talk about first is our confusion about the certain lyrics of like classic rock songs that we listen to and songs from musicals.
Well, that's going
to
be in
We got that in the video.
Yeah.
We got good video.
We shot a really great video of us.
Maxton, you're here to talk about the music.
Yeah,
I have ideas.
Fuck me, right?
Hey, Maxton, why don't you stay in your fucking
Rest that pretty little head of yours.
We shot a really good video. I'm still cutting it together, but just like a really good video of us doing our gang vocals, our teen vocals for the end song. But let's talk about the intro song and the end song.
Yeah.
And what was different this time around.
We interrupted. Anthony had like a good intro,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Good question.
And we just talked over him. So go ahead, Anthony.
I was going to ask, at what point did you decide instead of doing the typical season one sad acoustic version of the theme song to do a marching band version instead?
Well, Freddie texted me and said, start thinking about a different version for end of season two. I think I was like watching TV or watching trailers at home and I was like, epic trailer version.
What if it was a piano plink at the beginning?
And Freddie just didn't respond. And I was like, all right, so no on that one then, I guess. Yeah. And then
he was compiling the drone shots, you know, for the epic trailer.
Yeah, then we texted back and forth a little bit about it. I think marching band was actually your idea.
I had a dream.
Really?
Woke up. And then you and I had this, and then I saw you in the Discord said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we met in the dreamscape, my brother.
Wait, what?
I don't know.
I met Freddie I astral projected over to Freddie's house. And I was
Hell
like, what about
yeah.
a marching band version?
Yeah.
And then, you know, I turned into a big alligator and Freddie.
No, I was traveling the astral plane.
Traveling the astral plane at this time.
No, I did wake up. I think it was on the tour. Matt and I, we just, you know, we got back from this film tour showing our movie. And then I was like, one of the mornings, I was like, something different, marching band.
Yeah.
I figured we were going to do another acoustic one. And then you were like, let's do something different. And then you said, Martin. Yeah.
It literally never occurred to me that it would be an acoustic. I don't know why. I was like, it's got to be something different.
I remember because Freddie, we were on the plane, and Freddie's like, Matt, sometimes when I dream, good ideas come. I'm like, where's this going? And he's like, this is why I listen to myself in my dreams. Like, okay. He's like, a marching band version, not acoustic. We can't do the same shit again. A marching band. It's going to be good. It's good.
Was he doing the Italian hand gesture like that?
Yeah, he was. He was like, this is why I listen to my dreams. I was like, no, that is a good idea for a good job. You should dream more. That was very good. So yes, they did come to you in your dream and you're very excited by it. And it was perfect.
Yeah.
Max, can you tell us a little bit more about how much you liked Freddie's idea?
Do you mean this one or all of them? No, I love this idea. I mean, it was so Wednesday at Vidiot, some people came up to me and they were like, hey, are we going to get an acoustic version of On My Way?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't think we had figured it out yet.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, probably not. But I don't know. You know, like trying to be kind of
this was a little bit last minute. And I have to give you a lot of credit for jumping on and being like, oh, hell yeah. You know, and turning it around very, very quickly.
It was a wild weekend, but it was fun. Yeah. So that was the only thing that was kind of stressful was like, because marching band is like to make it sound real with software instruments, you need a lot of tracks and you have to kind of put them all in a space. And the space has to be the same kind of across all the tracks. So then you're, for like the music nerds out there, you're stuck determining like, okay, am I going to use like the microphones that are built into the software instrument tracks? Or am I going to use a reverb that sounds like a room across the board?
Yeah.
I went with the first one because the mics sounded pretty good. But the most time consuming thing was the dialing in of the.
Well, I would imagine too, because there's actually quite a bit of horns in the original. So like making that distinct, which I think you did a great job of, like that is another challenge in terms of like, because it sounds like a marching band, which is super cool.
Yeah.
Like the, but yeah, that's awesome.
It's deceiving because in the original, there's actually three tracks that are stereo horn tracks. And on each one, I'd say there's about like three or four horn parts.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them I just muted because it wasn't working.
Oh, interesting.
There's a thing that happens in the chorus. It's like a bow, bump, bump, bow. And I just muted that because I was like, that's not really. So the other thing about the room sounds of the marching band instruments was that with the way that these samples were working, there's like a much longer delay. And because I was doing it in Pro Tools, figuring out the delay compensation was like sometimes literally dragging over the, so like timing everything up.
Yeah.
And all of that stuff.
What is the room, like, what is it that you eventually ended up on? Like, is it like, you know, Studio Hall 3?
It was like whatever they recorded it in. So, but they get different mic positions when they do it.
I see.
And
I
a lot of, it was a Spitfire library called Drumline for the drums.
Oh, cool.
And a lot of the Spitfire stuff is recorded at Abbey Road or,
or
Air Studios.
So it's
London.
Like actual instruments that are recorded as samples, and then you can kind of line them up yourself to make what you want out of them. That's kind of dope.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Now here's
how many
question.
Times did you have to watch the Nick Cannon movie Drumline?
Just once.
The space. Okay.
Yeah, it's burned into my memory.
The only question I had, and this is the only note I had on an early draft, which was, where did the library of the one guy blowing the whistle at the beginning come from? Because, you know what I mean? All the marching bands are like, tila, kaka, and then there's this one, tweet. You know what I mean? Like, what's that guy doing? Is there a special library just for him, or was that you with a whistle outside?
I thought about it. I thought about the whistle library. I just couldn't justify the $49 whistle library that I was only going to use one time. I got it off a Splice.
Just every song you do from now on has a whistle.
Is the whistle guy?
Gotta make it worth it.
I gotta get my money's
worth. What do you think about a whistle right here?
what if a guy just to hype everyone up blew a whistle really hard at the beginning of this song, too?
And then I was going to go buy a whistle and do it, but then I forgot and I ran out of time. So
and whistles were $49 also. And you're like,
yeah. It was like,
if scissors are $42,
yeah, it's the same size as your scissors.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's just going to open a fucking landfill anyway. So, like, you know what I mean? I found one on Splice, which is like a online sample library.
Oh, cool. Online whistle store.
Yeah. And I searched drill beats and then I found, they have like all the different layers of different beats in there. And I found a whistle and I just cut it and like,
tuned. Cool.
I think I tuned it up.
So is that a custom drum line that you put together yourself? Or was that like, cause I was like, do you have a lot of
where'd
experience
you find all these
cooking up a drum line part? Cause that feels like an incredibly specific type of percussion thing to do.
I texted this to Freddie. It was just individual samples that I kind of like programmed in, but I was in drumline.
No shit.
In high school, but don't get excited because
you played the whistle.
We didn't have real drums because our teacher, you know, God bless him, like didn't have his stuff together too great. So we're hitting trash cans. And
okay.
Like, it was
stomp,
like a stomp.
Yeah,
knockoff.
Nice.
And I remember we went in this parade. There's like a lot of parades in Tampa and like right on Bayshore. And we went in this local like kids parade, and I was holding this hefty 50 gallon plastic garbage bin upside down and like hitting it with an actual drum mallet. And by the end, my hand was just so blistered and like messed up from the, we were walking like 2 miles doing this for like an hour, you know, it sucked. But no, I mean, like, as far as that goes, it was pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what it's supposed to sound like.
Sure. Yeah.
Is drum lines just like you take the beat and then you just put a lot more in there? So it sounds like, it feels like drum lines just like, and then it's like, instead of da da da, it's like, a drum line now.
There are drum majors out there shaking.
I'm just saying how listening to this. Layman, what it sounds
like. I mean, you're not entirely
like,
wrong.
Yeah, but like an emperor says there's too many notes to Salieri.
That's kind of the gist of it. But yeah, that's probably going to upset some people. I mean,
Matt's already pissed off farmers. Yeah,
I'm going after folks.
He just says what we're all thinking.
Yeah, it's a lot of like knowing what the rhythms sound like and then layering them in. And there was, I think twice I would walk away and go get a coffee and come back and listen to it. And I'm like, this is unhinged. Like there's way too much going on.
Yeah.
So I would mute a bunch of stuff. The idea was to like get it to sound as big as possible using as few tracks as possible, I guess.
So it would just sound like a cacophony of noise.
Cause it will.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
Especially with like 800 snare drums, you know,
all playing. Also, this one, by the way, just sort of to keep talking about this track, everyone got a second verse that wasn't in there before.
Well, before we talk about the second verse in particular, can we zoom out a little bit and talk about, like, you're kind of like a creepo because you somehow wrote a song that made more sense after we completed the story that you did not hear yet.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, how did you do that? Like, what was your approach to the second season theme in general? Because I don't even think we've had you on to just discuss the second season theme.
You know, when we did the season two theme, Freddie and I talked, like, at length about what the characters, who they were, like, what this season was going to be like, as much as we knew at that point. There's like a lot of, I used to tell myself it'll be all right. Like it was intended to kind of be an evolution of the first.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that comes through, I think.
Yeah.
Is that
maybe it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy because that song.
I guess.
We hear it so much.
That like,
no,
like,
I mean, I actually genuinely think that's partially true.
Yeah, the song
like,
becomes part of the identity of the show to me. So then like I kind of play to it.
Because you also, there's an alternate version. You guys did a first version of the season two theme that was like way more like upbeat. It had like a lot of like,
yeah, I remember
the
this.
Who kind of influence
kicking
on
ass,
it. It was like,
yeah,
it was like a much more optimistic.
It's
I would
about
say.
Time.
Yeah. It was like really hard rock and roll, which I loved. But like once we did the second one and like, I remember when we all listened to it, it was like, holy shit.
Yeah,
and
I remember
it kind of like, it definitely
that
flavored how I was thinking about the season for sure.
We were also just coming off of like the Fetch Quest theme, so I was fucking
amped.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, as far as influencing the show, like, does that mean I get an EP credit or something?
Yeah.
Like,
for sure.
I just said it.
Cool. Thanks. Thanks, Matt. Matt says what we're
Unless you doing. Unionize, you'll get whatever credit you want.
Yeah, and then as we said, we get the whole song at the end here.
Yeah, so because are you saying that because you're not playing the...
You know, there's a podcast edit. And if you recall, for those of you who remember season one, the dictum of season one's like intro was very specific and it was designed entirely around the fact that at some point something needs to drop out and we need to do an intro to a podcast. So like structurally, it's not like what you...
It's not a full song.
It's not a full song. It's a podcast song.
Right.
It's a little bit of a verse that dips out for a little bit as the background music goes. Right. So it's like, it's fulfilling needs beyond kind of the typical, just like, I want to make a 3.5 minute catchy song. Similar to this, you know, like there's two verses and then we were like, oh, but like, you know, it's a podcast, so we got to get into the show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we duck and then we don't hear it. And we haven't heard it until this point, which was, I think, kind of cool. It was
always
hidden there.
Yeah, it was always in the...
Except for the people who went to Bandcamp to download the full version.
Yeah, the
that's
real
one. Yeah,
the true
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. And it's funny you talk about that, too, because, like, as far as all right goes,
yeah,
it's like the most positive response I've ever had to anything I ever did in my life.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like you said, it's like
a minute, be so surprised.
It's like a minute and 30 seconds long, and I'm just like, maybe I should just write songs that are a minute. And you and I talked about that one time, actually. You were talking about TikTok or something.
Yeah, the kids are popping off with these two-minute songs.
Have you seen this like hyper music trend?
No.
Is that what it's called?
I love it.
I saw a YouTube video the other day that was basically, they're like, yeah, so you're going to take this EDM song and speed it up 30 BPM, and then you're going to chop this up and then speed it up again. And it was crazy, but it was really fun. And I don't know, I really dig it, you know?
I think we're entering this, like, Dada is deconstructivist era when it comes to pop music for the first time. You're getting, like, just absurd sounding stuff. Stuff that makes you feel like old for the first time, dog.
Yeah.
Damn. It's such an interesting kind of like combination of our attention spans are so short that we need like 2 minute songs. But then when you find a song that you really like, you just want it to be longer. So this is kind of an interesting little situation there.
Yeah, totally.
Weren't songs shorter though?
No.
Like, no, like the Beatles and the Monkees. Yeah, back in the day. Cause like there's that sample that Kanye uses that like whatever that. Mm-hmm. Famous guys be like, here's all you need for a 2 minute song. And then as streaming got, before they realized that it was all about the number of tracks, is like songs, like as concept albums started becoming again, it was all longer. But I feel like whenever I listen to the Monkees, like every song from the Monkees is like 2 minutes long.
Yeah. There's some jazz songs that are like old jazz standards that if you just listen to the old recordings of them, yeah, they're like a minute and a half.
Yeah, I guess like classic rock is all like 11 minute anthems. But like, Beatles songs are like 2 minutes long also.
I was thinking of the ultimate too long song, which is Led Zeppelin's Whole Lot of Love, which has that whole shitty section in the middle. Like after, it's like it's literally like they go from the hardest rock riff of all time to just noodly bullshit for 10 hours. And then the greatest guitar solo you've ever heard. And then back into just the hardest rock riff you've ever heard.
That so way about like, Rush endures because they are the only artist capable of making a song that like 10 seconds in you're like, this is the sickest song I've ever heard, and then 10 seconds later you're like, this is the dumbest shit that's ever been recorded.
And then 10 seconds later you're like,
this is good again. In that realm of like songs that feel like they go too long for me, and I get why, it is Metallica is the ultimate, like, I get it, man. 7 minutes in, hey, my guy, you know?
Yeah, I'm really glad you said that. Casey Edwards and I are in like a constant feud about Rush, where he loves Rush, and I'm always like sending him pictures of like my trash can. I'm like, that's where Rush should be.
Shit.
He's like pretty mad at me about it.
Well,
I
we
think.
Are gonna
love
want
you,
a Rush theme song for season 3. That's
great.
The tonal
season
comp.
3 is Rush.
No, you probably crush 17 it. Minute prog rock epic.
I feel like sometimes when people make something based around something they hate, they crush it. I feel like if we told you to do a Rush song,
like
you'd
people
crush
making
it.
Dungeons and Dragons podcast.
Exactly. I feel like you'd crush it.
I feel like if a minute and a half worked, like, why wouldn't 22 and a half minutes work?
It's 22 times as good.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
Yeah, I guess it all comes back around. It's like fashion. Yeah.
That's true. That's true. Maybe we're entering our prog rock era with all of the shortened songs.
Oh, God.
When is when's ska coming back? Can you tell us so I can be ready?
I don't know if ska ever left for some of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ska's always with us.
Have you heard my Tapatio tweet?
No. I know. Well, I don't understand what you said.
Somebody fucking did a tweet that said, I ain't got no Tapatio. I ain't got no spicy sauce. And I think about that constantly.
Are you a hot sauce head?
I am, yeah. Oh. I mean, I don't know the difference between hot sauces. So no. I just like burning myself.
What are your sort of final thoughts here, Max, in terms of where the season... So song I, went like where do you think what,
your
what
final
are you
thoughts in terms
do?
Of how we ended this season, how did you think we did?
So I'm actually I put like a compilation together of all the theme songs and iterations for the show so far.
Oh, sick.
And I'm putting it out on Spotify on April 12th.
Oh, fuck yeah. Oh, so, cool. Hell yes.
Yeah, so I wanted to plug that, obviously, but I'm super excited because like people have been messaging me about like put it out on Spotify.
Yeah
That's great.
And I think, like, finally, I just felt like there was enough stuff to do a... I didn't want to just do one, another one.
See, but, you, mini
but that's
EP
the
now.
Way it worked. But that's the way Spotify gets played.
Yeah,
now,
totally
it?
Is. But I'm also just, like, really stubborn.
When was the decision to have all of us characters sing?
Yeah, that was another thing that we talked about in that same text message where it was, like, I had mentioned, like, doing a choral version.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Like, Gregorian chant, everybody doing it.
I think, like... Should like the dope. Backdrop of you all against a choral version may have rubbed a little bit, I felt like with the marching band thing, it made a lot more sense. This is not exactly what I'm trying to say. I'm just trying to say, like,
hardly.
What do you mean?
Totally cool.
No, I'm kidding. No, you guys nailed it. That was like the most fun.
That was one of the most fun recording sessions that we had.
And you got to meet my mother-in-law too.
Yeah,
when
it was great. That was cool. She was a nice lady.
She was like, they were so nice. She was like, they're all so nice. I'm like, yeah, you know, you just met them, so give it some time.
Give it a second.
Saw them at their best.
Yeah, right.
No, I thought that was great, because I feel like, to me, that's like, the marching band idea was really good, and then once it was like hearing all the characters sing at the end.
Yeah. It's very emotional. Like,
yeah, it was really heartfelt. I think it fits really well for, especially since all of the characters have this like baggage, other than maybe Taylor, who's like pretty much expresses himself at all times. Mm-hmm. But the other three characters are like hard to express themselves. So like hearing everybody like singing just like all out, like this like kind of like triumphant song was like, I thought that was like perfectly fitting.
I was actually going to ask, how did you pick the final arrangement in terms of who got what line? Because we had like thoughts on it originally, and then we were like, you know, let's all just sing the entire thing and then let Max and Freddie kind of figure it out.
Yeah, because
I really liked that like Normal and Hermie come in as like together. I thought that was really cool. Like there's a lot of nice little choices in how that worked out. It's like, what was your instinct? What were your instincts on that?
I knew that I wanted to start with Beth.
Mm-hmm.
And then I knew that like I was going to basically go through all the takes and pick like the best couple words from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And Freddie and I had talked a lot about like, is somebody doing a whole line versus a half line? And then panning was another thing. Like, where are they in the mix? Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of like, you know, Will, you and Anthony sounded like your voices together worked really well. And then like Beth and Freddie's voices worked together really well. And I knew Matt was like a standalone. And
he was like, didn't work with anybody.
Right. Just because like, it was like in the middle and I was like, that's the timing of it and everything. Mm. Like it's going to hit right there. You know, just like dynamics, basically.
It was fucking cool. Like it was really awesome hearing it come together.
Yeah.
And I had listened to it when Will found it in the drop.
Yeah, we were like asking Freddie, like, where's it cut? Where is it? Where is it? Freddie did fucking nothing.
I was like,
God damn it.
I had to
dig through the Dropbox and pull out like the Max mix. I was like, here we go.
I was like, thank God Will did this because I would have done the exact same thing. And I heard it and I was like, this is amazing. But you know, I had like been at the recording, so I didn't think it would like affect me. And then when I heard it in conjunction with like having just listened to the finale, and then when everybody's like credits came in at the end, I teared up and I was like, I did this. I don't know why I'm crying, but it really touched me.
Dude, you guys crushed it. I even like texted Beth afterwards and was like, punk band? Like, are we starting a punk band sometime?
I'd be so down. And I don't know if the world would be down, but I would be down. So.
But I think the whole idea is that who cares if they're done? Because that's like punk rock.
You know what? You know that's a good point.
Yeah, what is more punk rock than...
You think the Sex Pistols were like, I don't know, are people going to like this?
I don't know if we should put sex in our name.
What?
Or a gun.
I just know there was this moment where, Freddie, you were standing like off to the side of my desk. Beth was in the booth. Beth started to sing and you and I looked at each other.
Yeah.
And we both had the same thought at the same time, which was like going from sophomore slump, talking to you about singing and like how you felt about it versus now, I was like, holy fuck, like Beth is a really good singer.
Yeah, it was like, crazy because, you know, throughout the whole process, you know, you see a video of it that we did for an MBIC, but like recording Sophomore Slump, you get to see you at the start of that process, you're talking about taking vocal lessons. Mm-hmm. And then in that booth at the end, it was like, oh, shit. This is somebody who's had a little bit of mic experience, a little time on the booth. You could tell.
Yeah, she kicks that fucking door down. It's great. Yeah.
It was great.
And the grit, which is like not easy to do for a lot of people. So, yeah, it was a total treat. And like just getting to hang out with you guys and stuff.
Yeah, we are really fun to hang out with.
And everything.
Yeah. To be transparent, I was a little nervous about that because the first time I've had like a group session in there. So I was like, oh, I don't know what this is.
Good space.
The vibe feels pretty good, right?
Absolutely.
It's cozy, but it's also just like, you could get in the work zone.
Yeah. I felt safe and taken care of.
You did.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It's like being spooned by a room.
Yeah.
A lot of good natural light.
Yeah.
You got an air conditioner, you got press buttons on. That's how you know, by the way, when you're in a real spot. Where's the air conditioner remote? That turned out.
It was weird that you required no pants while working there, but other than that.
That's just a thing I do.
Yeah, that's just sort of
good. Just got to keep it free and leave it free, you know? Yeah.
No inhibitions.
Like Jazz, it's about the clothes you don't wear.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for spending time with us talking about the songs and your incredible contributions to the show, Max.
What's your instinct for season 3?
What's my instinct?
He doesn't know what it is.
I know. Just what do you think? What do you want to do, baby?
Like, what do I want to do? Dude, I would really love to do something that is at least like hip hop adjacent.
I knew you were going to say hip hop. Yeah, yeah, I felt in my bones, yeah, man. Yeah.
It was one of the things that I had actually texted you about this season two and theme song where I was like, maybe we should do a hip hop version
Max,
of it.
Good news. The next thing that I'm DMing is set in the 1950s. So
get
ready to think in exactly the opposite direction.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Well, but here's the thing, right? Like, I think that like one of the fun things about when we do the theme song, I felt this in, you know, season one, I felt like we were like, all right, we just got to get a show. We need to get a theme, whatever. Right. But then as we did Fetch Quest, as we did season two, it sort of becomes its own little weird creative thing. I would say that, like, I think I'm pretty confident that Fetch Quest went in the direction that nobody thought it would go. And I think
I still think about how insane the Fetch Quest theme is.
And I think
the dog,
Miley
sample.
RIP.
RIP. To a real one, but immortalized forever in the Fetch Quest theme.
To the fucking heavy metal blast beat into the trap beat at the end. Yeah. And it was just like, I just remember you sent me the first cut. I was like, this is, I just like, my brain just went on a whole journey. It's 30 seconds.
Fetch Quest from the 50s. What's that like?
Yeah. Interesting. Who knows? Interesting. Anyway.
That sounds a lot fun. Of synths.
Maybe some, maybe some synths. Maybe some,
maybe go like old. You know, it's not
if we were old, if not that we are necessarily, but if we were all playing like grandparents, we're old folks, what would you think? What's your right away? Why would you bring
old folks?
Grandparents in space.
I would
let's
actually
say.
Still probably think hip hop.
Yeah, I, yeah.
But I was thinking, do it like this is classics or from because 2000 years of the future.
I have this buddy who Freddie has met named Chell Strong, who's just like a fucking incredible rapper. And like has he's one of those people you record him, and then you don't have to time correct anything he does. And I've done that where I like move something onto the grid and he's like, no, that's not right, move it back. And I'll move it back and I'm like, oh, he did that on purpose. Like he's in the pocket constantly, which is an unbelievable talent.
Yeah.
That is like super rare. Yeah. I would love to do something, maybe bring him in like do something along those lines. He's the best. But 50s, grandparents, I mean, that's fucking rad.
it won't be grandparents.
Great grandparents. I'm doing a thing in between that's a 1950s.
Give
thing,
me a hint. Can you give me a hint?
We don't know yet. Oh, Will knows his thing.
So my thing is we're doing a Call of Cthulhu thing set in like Leave It to Beaverville.
Oh, dude, then you know what it is.
Monster Mash?
No, it's like like mid-century modern Palm Springs, lots of like, what's that instrument called?
Like the Wurlitzer mood organ
kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds so fun.
Yeah. It's like a horror 1950s.
Rhodesy. Hammond? Vibraphone? Vibraphone and like
like some lounge kind of thing going on a little interesting.
I like that. That could be fun. Yeah, like going zagging a little bit from like the way you think the like 1950s horror with the synth or whatever
that is. No, the
theremin.
That would be the most obvious thing to do. But it's like,
hear me
like
out though, a fucking Cthulhu version of the Monster Mash, but it's like about Cthulhu and Riley and all those guys.
I was racist in the lab.
Shit, that's good.
I mean, give me any excuse to buy a theremin. So.
I feel like every composer.
You can make one.
You could technically make any.
I don't know if I could.
You could. They're not hard to make.
Well,
Matt, wait. Okay, hold on. Wait,
bitch,
Matt,
go
hold
make
on,
a
hold
theremin.
Hold on. Matt, they're not hard to make. A theremin. What? So where are you basing that off of? Like your extensive musical instrument
building
experience?
After Ed Wood came out, I may or may not have made a theremin in high school.
You made a theremin in high school?
Yeah, it didn't work very well. I'll show you. It's not that hard. It's just a fucking like electrical like circuit between like two pieces of metal next to each other.
I'm obsessed with you watched Ed Wood and you're like, I need to make a theremin.
Matt was the sickest kid in high school, dude.
Pretty fucking cool.
That's great. Well, thank you guys so much.
Thank you for being here.
I love you, Max.
And where's the Spotify? What's your Spotify, bro?
It's just my name, Maxim Waller.
All right.
Hell so
yeah.
Sick.
So yeah.
Sick. Fuck yeah.
April 12th, and you're going to get All Right, the acoustic version. It'll be the 1930s version that we did with the brass section. And then it'll be the season two theme and then the renditions thereafter of that. Cool. Oh, and an instrumental one, just in case people are curious about
it. You can throw a Fetch Quest on there too, right?
Fetch Quest is on there.
Nice, sick.
Yeah.
That's an example of a song that I'm like, I wish this was 10 times longer. Yeah.
Thank you, Max.
So good.
Thank you, Max.
Dungeons and Dice is brought to you this week by Acorns. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, and then automatically invests your money for you.
You ever seen a big squirrel?
I'll tell you what, Beth, I felt like a big squirrel when I was using Acorns, when I was squirreling away my paycheck money away into investments. It was very easy to use.
The Rock uses
sometimes,
it.
The Rock yeah, uses sometimes it. Sometimes I see a squirrel so big, I'm like, is that dangerous?
Acorns was great because I think a lot of people have a lot of questions about how the stock market works. It made it very, very simple. It was a very simplified way of getting into it. It divides things up, and the portfolios that are pre-built are just like, yeah, sound portfolios. Head to acorns.com/dungeons or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Client's testimonial may not be representative of all clients. Tier 1 compensation provided. Compensation provides an incentive to positively promote a few important disclosures at acorns.com/dungeons. Investing involves risk, including the loss of principal. Please consider your objectives, risk tolerance, and Acorns fees before investing. Acorns Advisors, LLC. Acorns is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Broker services are provided to clients of Acorns by Acorns Securities, LLC. Member FINRA, SIPC. For more information, visit acorns.com. Dungeons and Dice is brought to you this week by Hims.
Boing!
Boing. Your sex life is important, but your schedule is busy.
What is?
Wait, what?
Why was it if your sex life is not important and you're pretty free?
You may not have the time to go to the doctor's office to get treated for your erectile dysfunction, but through Hims, you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. The dream! Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper.
Do they have Flintstone versions?
Wish I had a generic alternative to my wife.
I'm pretty sure that Hanna-Barbera
Dude, I want whatever Barney Rubble's eating. That guy's
got
to go
home. You see, they got so much energy that they could drive a car with their feet. The process
dude,
is
Barney
simple.
Barney was punching above his weight limit, like 100%.
That's true. He didn't skip leg day, dude. He had thighs, dog. Barney could grip me between his thighs any day of the week. The
process is like, simple. It's a living.
Process simple, 100% online, no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a series of questions on their site. The medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you for free. No insurance needed if ED is getting you down.
Dude, Barney probably wears that, just like that long shirt so that he could just like roll it up at any time. His dick is right there. That's why he's wearing that long shirt.
It's time you join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers to get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/daddies. That's hims.com/daddies for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/daddies.
Get as hard as the Stone Age.
Hardmints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
So Quick Oats Breakfast asks, are we happy with where our characters wound up?
Extremely satisfied. Yeah. The little detail that Beth, you added of Taylor absolutely went to jail. Yes, absolutely. Fucking hilarious. Of course, this feral child who thinks he's perfect goes to jail. Like, yes, that's absolutely.
It does not affect his confidence in himself at all.
Yeah, because by the way, we've seen those guys. The guy who did Fyre Festival still running around trying to do Fyre Festival again.
Do you think
know?
Taylor tried to do a Fyre Festival?
I think he tried to start his own anime con.
Or a cult.
Oh, an anime convention.
Like his own convention.
And he got all the money first and then didn't know what to do with it.
Dashcon 2.
He got the ball pit from Dashcon.
Yeah.
I'm really, really, really happy with where Normal wound up. I like that it's not a tidy little bow. I miss that little goofus so much. Yeah, I had a ton of fun playing the character. And this is a simple answer, but yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so stoked. The fact that Matt gave me such a gift in that Link and Scary being married, not just because it's funny, but because I think, you know, in order to, not saying that all marriages are good, but to be in love with somebody, you have to love yourself. And there's an implicit like love for herself that Scary has found along the way here. And I think that that was so sorely lacking at the beginning of the season. So to see her find that, it was really important to me for her arc and stuff like that. So I'm stoked.
Yeah, I wasn't sure going to the very end, but, you know, I always like that these coming of age stories are not about like having an ending so much as like understanding where the character is going to be putting their efforts as they move forward. And I thought that last moment with Lincoln and Grant was just like the right amount of acceptance of where they are in a bad spot, but they both decide that they're going to work together as in a different relationship than it was before. Like, not that they're not father and son anymore, but it's a different age. Like, you're older. Like, now we have to work more as like peers, and that we're in a relationship together. And like, you need to work with me if I'm going to, you know, be your son and so forth. And then, yeah, I thought all the ending was just really fun. Like, it's not that it needs to be like happy per se, but I thought so much of it was so rough that, like, yeah, I just like that Lincoln had a nice, you know, he doesn't have to be a pro soccer player or any other stuff. Like, I just like him being around town, and I feel like Lincoln just wants family in the first place. So like him having a son and just being at the school and, you know, coaching just felt right and fun. And then he landed the hottest girl in school. What do you want? What do you want? Lincoln won.
The lowest to his Peter.
No, I thought it was really funny. And it's funny because I didn't even think about him having a kid, and then adding Jerry was just, I think in my head, him being there as a soccer coach was maybe a little sadder, but then
it's so funny, the coach lineage too.
Yeah, that was like so being cute about it. Yeah. But then it's just having a kid that's at the school that's also like, clearly he's well-parented enough that we're like engaging him to like go out there and be the mascot, and he's struggling. I don't know. It's just, I fit really well. I was like, this is wonderful. I just love the addition of Jerry being the kid. And it's funny because in retrospect, I was just a good parenting moment for Link. Like, Link takes his friend who was a good mascot, and like the first thing he's thinking about is like, go, hey, my son's having some trouble.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. He's just like,
my sad friend is going to tell him something really depressing about being a mascot.
I feel like in that moment, you made Link like a good dad too. So it just worked really well. I thought it was really fun. I loved it.
Nikita asks, after season one playing characters around your age, then digging through memorabilia to make younger season two characters, how is everyone feeling about making season three grandparents who will presumably be quite a bit older than all of you? Or are you still of the teen mindset and the due date is the due date and you haven't thought about it yet?
This is the latter for me.
Because we have like another season before that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to be thinking about this new character I need for Will's thing. I've definitely vaguely thought about grandparents. To me, I know like the general angle, like I just want to do, and just in terms of like, I want to have a character that's just like in the prime of their life, you know, like fucking ready for the big ride, baby, you know, like a looser, like a little bit more. And like,
I've been very much, I think, I can't remember if I pitched that. I was like, somebody should play like a 35-year-old who married a widow. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, I'm a grandpa now. Yeah, and like, his kids are like his age. And they're like, do not call me grandpa. You are 2 years older than me.
That's really good.
I was thinking it would be fun to do a Valley Girl grandma. Like, it'd be an old person voice, but also a Valley Girl voice. That would just be a fun challenge.
I was also low key thinking about playing a grandma, so we'll see how it goes. There's this fucking song, Bonnie Raitt song called Angel from Montgomery, which is one of my favorite songs, but it's about this old woman living in Montgomery. It's a fucking awesome song about like womanhood from this perspective of this, you know, like from an older perspective, which we don't hear a lot. And then I found out it was written by John Prine, who's a 30-year-old dude when he wrote it. I'm like, how the fuck did he write this song? This is insane. So I was like, if John Prine can do it, I can do it. I can play.
So a 30-year-old man wrote an older woman that responded really well to another 30-year-old man.
Exactly.
This guy really gets what it's like to be
Shut
an old woman.
Shut the fuck up, man.
I think I could play such a funny, crotchety old person. Mm-hmm. I'm still looking forward to that, but yeah.
For our last question, let's go for Torby. Torby says, is there anything you wanted to accomplish for your characters that couldn't happen in the story?
That couldn't happen. No.
I'll say my mildest regret is that, and it's not even necessarily a character thing, I wish we had done an intro that was like a parody of some of the music I listened to in high school. So meaning that like maybe 23 people have heard of the song, you know, it's just
like a real deep cut,
like 2009 sort of song, and done a parody of that would have been my dream. But maybe next time.
I think I said mine, which is, I think Taylor definitely had an insufferable monologue to his friends where he recast himself, of course, as the Arbiter and the fucking guide shepherd for their world. It's like, I don't know, to me, very funny.
it wouldn't need it for the season. I guess the only thing, and I always tried to find ways. I think one of the intros we did when like the Schmegen captured us, I like made me talking to Marco. Is like, I wish we had like, he never really solidified, and we never really had the most time we have with him is in the Titanic, and even then it's not really. So like, it would have been fun to do something with him.
The son of the ambassador of China. Sorry, Matt.
Oh no, I had a lot of ideas for Marco, but again, you didn't really. It's not like a really regret, but that'd be the only thing I can really think of them like stuff I had thought about that we never really did anything with.
I am bummed I couldn't find a way to sneak Birdie Oak in there. I thought that would have been fun. With Normal, I'm trying to think if there was anything. The whole time I was looking at my spell sheet, Normal has an ability called Divine Intervention, where you can like ask God to do something for you. And so I was like, I had that in my back pocket, like Normal will at the most desperate possible moment, I can pray to God and see what happens. Or Normal's God, or figure out he's going to pray to this. When I rolled him as a cleric, I was thinking that obviously like school spirit became like a big thing with him. But like, I was thinking that like, oh, like there's this fun motif of like school spirit being the sort of like religion that he has that I didn't really explore as much. But that was the one spell I was like, oh, I never got a chance to use this. But we got that great moment on the throne of God anyways.
Yeah. That's true. We became God.
My big moment is I regret that the Kellogg knife never came back.
Oh, yeah. My bad.
No, it's not your bad. It's the group's bad. I was really hoping that would be a really good brick joke of like, hey, remember when we said that if you didn't masturbate, this would be useful? Well, they haven't masturbated for the entire 25 episodes between, you know, introducing him and using. Could have killed Willie in one shot with the Kellogg knife.
Oh.
But it's no big deal. It's better that he died.
It's lying somewhere, sitting there, gathering. The Kellogg knife
is just MacGuffin. Gathering infinite power
well,
now?
Well, no, but think about it for a second. It's so interesting that we have the duality of the Kellogg knife and the J.O. crystals as like canon, because they both kind of are like two sides of the same coin. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
Well, that's it for season two, I guess.
Before we wrap it up, there's a baton that's about to be handed.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
From one man to one DM. To another DM. Oh,
I'm taking out the baton now. It's shining.
Wow. Ooh, what
it's
a big dildo. Baton. Oh, what a big baton you have, Anthony.
A little floppy.
Oh, it's a fleshlight on one side.
Oh, wow.
I'm passing it over to William.
Thank you.
William!
I am putting the fleshlight on my penis.
You have sheathed the baton of DMing. Tell us, William, what secrets can you reveal?
So
it looks a little roomy.
Feels a little roomy. The next thing we're going to do is for about a year, we're going to be running another game in the Call of Cthulhu system.
Yay. Our favorite system!
So we're taking a little break from D&D, and so it's going to be a horror campaign set in the 1950s. The name is the Peachyville Horror. Think Leave it to Beaver meets Call of Cthulhu is all I will say for now.
Love it.
We're very excited for that.
So you guys all got to email me your 50s.
I have absolutely 0% of my character done, so that is my job this week. I'm very excited, though. Will wanted me to play a Confederate soldier.
Hold on. I told Matt, I was like, you know, 1950s, like you could be a 100-year-old Civil War soldier is all I said.
That's true.
And then Matt was like, Will, the only way I would do this is if I got to play a Confederate soldier you uncomfortable. And I was like, it's fine. If you do it, I'll just kill you off very quickly.
That'd be the only way it would be funny, but I could never do that. No, I'm not going to be a Civil War soldier. I don't want to be an old man.
But what horrors await? Only time will tell.
Do any of you know your characters yet?
No.
I know, by the way,
I want everyone to know.
Freddie, have you workshopped your next female star stage and screen name that you're going to be?
Not yet. No. Yeah. I come into
I have some options for you, so
thank
just let
you.
Me know.
Excellent. And I want to say one of the things I'm most excited about.
Can I just pitch one to you?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Toni Collette.
That's really good.
Toni Collette!
Shit.
Holy shit, dude!
Shit.
That's
holy
really
shit!
Good.
Oh, that's better. God. I was going to say Ashley Judd, but Toni Collette.
I love Ashley
as a male name.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm most excited about here as the show continues for our next arc is for the world to meet Anthony Birch as a player. People on the Patreon have gotten hints of Birch as a player.
Yeah.
He's been
but secretly,
on Fetch Quest.
Some Fetch Quest.
Yeah. But I'm saying like in a long form, like really, like I'm psyched because I think secretly.
Like a full look at him. Like come here.
Yeah.
Come here.
I think secretly.
Show me what you got.
I think secretly we've been harboring a fucking killer.
Don't
raise
expectations.
Don't raise expectations. Anthony is the best at both parts of the job.
Don't raise expectations.
We fucking put this cannonball on ice for 5 years and now we unleash it. Come on, man. Give a little bit of a hype to yourself, you know?
All right. Beth, would you like to take us out?
Sure. Yeah. Taking it out, I want to thank you, the person listening to this. Whether thanks. You're a casual, a filthy casual, just like tuning in sometimes, maybe like letting the episodes pile up and then you're like, oh, maybe I'll listen to this fucking podcast while I'm emptying the dishwasher or whatever. Or whether you're in jail for stalking one of us.
One of us, Beth.
I just want to say thank you so much to coming on this wild ride with us. Something that becomes very apparent to me when I read comments and stuff like that about like different parts of the show is that I've listened to maybe every episode of the show like no more than two or three times. And I, you know, still find people who are like, yeah, I'm on my eighth listen through or something. And I'm like, wow, that, you know, a lot of people know the show better than maybe we do. And they're more familiar and they've really sometimes grown up with the show and stuff like that. So that is like kind of take a bow for that. I think when you make something and put it out in the world, there's a part of it that doesn't belong to you anymore. And so to embrace the other people that take ownership over the show and kind of like help it grow and spread the word and stuff like that means so much to us. And we really, truly couldn't do it without you. So thank you. To everyone listening.
Yeah, thank you.
So this is Teen Talk, the summary episode of season two, but we've done episodes of Teen Talk for every episode of the season, as well as every episode of season one.
Yep.
For a little show called Talking Dad, same format. Afterwards, we talk about it. So if you're interested, that and a whole lot of more audio and video content available for you, check it out. Patreon.com/DungeonsAndDads. Support the show directly.
How many hours of content
episode.
Do we have yet?
I should
so
tally it up, but it is a
it's
lot.
At least like 300, right?
Yeah, it's yeah. a
That'll
lot.
That'll be at least 300 hours of content.
Yeah.
Waiting for you on Patreon.com/DungeonsAndDads.
And what's coming 2 weeks from now?
And then coming from 2 weeks from now, we're going to give you a little sneak peek, a little taste of one of the, probably the biggest fan favorite Patreon response things we've ever done, which is a little side
Freddie Wong gamer comedian
called Kingdom Dad Monster. Matt has this, I would say, a cult classic Kickstarter board game called Kingdom Dad Monster. He loves
Kingdom Death Monster.
Kingdom Death Monster. He loves it for the intricate miniatures that you can paint, and that's something that he's been doing for
big
the
titty
last
anime.
Yeah,
that's,
okay. Well, then now people are going to Google it. And certain miniatures will give a certain impression of me, and other miniatures will give a different impression of me. Neither of them are great impressions of me, but let's just be clear: it's a scary monster's part.
Yeah. So, kind of a little bit of an experiment. We decided to run it. We've tried to play this game maybe three times, four times, but we've never been able to get it all the way through. And I said, you know, there's a way you can get someone.
It's my
to
favorite
play
board game,
game
ever, and we started this campaign, and it's been a hit, and we're already three episodes in, and I think it's just going to be a continual monthly Patreon bonus campaign that we're just going to keep doing until people get bored of it. But so far, that's not been the case. So that's
honestly,
one
of the things you were missing from Dungeons and Daddies is like crunchy combat where we actually follow rules. This might actually be a series for
it's
you.
Probably the crunchiest we'll ever get.
Yeah.
So look forward to that in 2 weeks, and then after that, Will takes the reins. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.